Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Nick Harum, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. We got Nick back. It was not too long ago. It was like three or four episodes ago.
Two or three weeks ago.
What were we talking about?
Battleship and...
Battleship and something else.
What to Expect When You're Expecting, which I didn't watch.
Well, I didn't see either. You. Yeah, I didn't see that. It was Battleship, and I forget, The Dictator.
The Dictator.
This week we have him back. Before we talk a little bit more, we'll get through the paperwork. You can go to fatguysinthemovies.com and find us. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys in the Movies or Fat Guys Network, and we pop right up. We are apparently, some of our podcasts are number one in Turkey. Go figure. And there was another one, like Bulgaria or something like that. We're showing up on weird lists.
You're probably going to show up on the terrorist watch list soon if you're not careful.
I'm assuming we are at some point. And they're going to be like, what are these people? They're saying things. Because we were like number three. This show was like number three in Kenya at one point.
Yeah, you're on the terrorist watch list. You're on the no-fly list now.
And we were like the top 200 in Ireland. So, yeah, again, what's going to happen, you know?
Well, let's not make any IRA jokes.
No, we won't. We don't want the...
You'll get a mysterious package.
Exactly. But if you want to bump us up into your own territories, you can go to iTunes and search us and then rank us, vote for us, leave a review, give us 5 stars, all that good stuff. Even if we don't deserve 5 stars, give us 5 stars. You can go to Fat Guys. You can visit the Fat Guys of the Movies on Facebook at facebook.com/FGATM. You can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. We have one of those to read. Actually, we have 2 of those to read in this middle segment. You go, if you want to call us the old-fashioned way, you can call us at 740-205-6456. I'm stumbling over all my words.
That's usually my job when I'm on, but...
I'm just flustered.
I just cursed you.
I'm verklempt. Anyways, Nick is back. There's actually there's a reason why Nick's back. I'm not just being lazy.
He's desperate.
I'm totally desperate. That's the way it is. Because here's the thing. Prometheus has had limited screenings. It hasn't been screened everywhere. And Nick and I both had a chance to see it early, and not a whole lot. Not everybody has. There's some people who haven't. And I wanted to get somebody on who had seen Prometheus to talk about Prometheus, because I want to have a little bit of a discussion, even though we're not going to get into spoiler territory there.
No.
So since Nick has seen it, and I know he actually is coherent on the podcast, allegedly, right?
I'm not drunk today.
Not today, at least, right? So he is here again. Nick, tell us where you're from and remind everybody where they can get all your awesomeness on the web.
Is that what we're calling it now?
You could buy the awesomeness.
I can be found at movieshateu2.com and at Twitter at movieshate2. That's T-O-O. And on Facebook at movieshateu2.
Yeah. As we've covered before, it's not movies hating the band U2.
Yeah, and it's not me eating the movies.
Yeah.
We've talked about that every time, so... Mm-hmm. 3 for 3.
Yeah, there you go. So we've got him back. But the first one, before we talk about Prometheus, we are going to talk about Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted, in which the animals from the Central Park Zoo escape Africa only to join the circus in Europe.
Step on it, boys! Let's get out of here!
Voila, giraffe at 12 o'clock.
Guys, we've got a tail.
Paparazzi!
How do we move through Europe without attracting attention?
Wait! The circus.
Remember, we just lay low.
Just until the heat dies down.
We're invisible.
Marty?
The circus! Afro circus! Afro circus! Afro! Polka dot! Polka dot! Polka dot! Afro!
Really?
Have you seen any of these movies?
Nope.
Because you don't have kids?
Nope.
And you don't lure kids into your house with this movie. You don't play it in the background and go, come on, kids.
I'd rather, if I was going to lure kids, I guess I would be like, let's go watch Lethal Weapon. I wouldn't be.
Yes, because that's
what I want to watch.
We have candy. Lethal Weapon and candy. There you
exactly.
go.
Exactly.
I would not use Lethal Weapon to I've got kids. They don't, and they like Lethal Weapon. I showed a couple of them Lethal Weapon, I think. You know, I can't remember whether I showed them.
Weekend Activity coming up.
That's right. We could watch that. Anyways, well, let's talk about Madagascar. These movies are silly. I'm sure you're stunned to find out.
Gosh, I'm speechless.
When the first one came out, they were going up against this movie called The Wild by Disney, and they're kind of similar type of movies about zoo animals that have to go to the wild.
Except Kiefer Sutherland was in The Wild, if I recall. I saw that either.
And William Shatner was in it, too. He played the evil...
Well, it's not like he turns down money.
Well, He doesn't. He could sing at your bar mitzvah if you want him to.
He'd probably do more of a spoken word at my bar mitzvah.
Well, yeah. You have an upcoming bar mitzvah? Or is that just what you do to lure children into your
once
house?
Once again, we're having a bar mitzvah.
Having a bar mitzvah. Oy vey. We got candy and Lethal Weapon. Come over to our house. Bring your yarmulke. Anyways, this one is... What's funny is I remember not particularly liking the second one, or I thought it was okay. And I thought the first one was cute. I thought the first one was cute and clever. And then the second one suffered by sequelitis. And usually when you get sequels, like these where you have multiple characters and they do that a lot in animated movies, they always have to, in the first movie, all the characters fit together in the story because that's what they wrote the story for. And if they had too many characters, they just get rid of them before they'd cast it or whatever. Well, then they had, well, we got to bring back the giraffe and the hippo and the lion and the zebra and give, and then the lemurs and give them everybody.
Don't forget the penguins.
And the penguins and the monkeys. And they had to give everybody a storyline. And so like the Melman the giraffe and Gloria the hippo, they have this really dumb side story. And it's just, in this movie, it's just kind of thrown in there. And then they have this sort of like, they also, what they do in a lot of times in sequels is they just create conflict. A great example is the Back to the Future movies, where suddenly Marty doesn't like to be called Chicken. And they're like, Chicken. And everybody in the universe seems to understand that calling Marty Chicken will make him do something. There's no hint whatsoever of that in the first movie. They just created it because they needed that little plot device. And they do that in this movie, too, where Alex the lion and Marty the zebra are fighting over who's actually the leader of the group. And again, I don't recall this being a big issue.
Ben Stiller and Chris Rock fighting over who's the leader. That's a... Riveting. Yeah. Riveting storytelling.
I mean, it has some funny moments. It's silly and stupid. It has the circus afro scene, which is a great song. I'd like to have that as my ringtone. But last summer I liked Cars 2. I was one of the few people who really enjoyed Cars 2. I thought it was fun. I thought it was cute. I didn't think it was trying to do anything more than it was trying to be. And I liked that whole spy aspect to it and all that kind of thing. This one's kind of like Cars 2, only in the Madagascar world, where it just kind of goes into Europe and goes weird, crazy places. They like crash a Monte Carlo casino and then like join the circus, which makes no sense whatsoever. But if you're looking for sense in these kind of movies...
I think you're in the wrong thing, because weren't the penguins flying a plane in one of the ones?
Yeah, they're flying a plane. So. They drive a car. There's a scene where, you know, they actually make a comment. Like, only people and penguins can drive, you know, because that makes total sense. No, the penguins are great. And honestly, I could watch an entire movie of the penguins.
Don't they have like a straight-to-DVD penguin movie?
They have a TV show.
Oh, do they?
They have a whole the Penguins of Madagascar is a TV show. I don't know. I've watched bits and pieces. It's very low-rent animation, though. You know, they don't spend a whole lot of money on that one. But it's kind of like when the Ice Age movies come out and they kind of have to find a story for everybody and they kind of have to shoehorn in every... And I'm just like, you know, I just watch an entire movie about Scrat, the little saber-toothed squirrel.
I saw, like, months ago when Christmas was around, they had a Christmas Ice Age, yeah, which didn't really make any sense. Okay, I would think it would just blow up, you know... Like the Bible having Santa and dinosaurs and everything else.
Well, dinosaurs are underground. Yeah,
but I thought there were still dinosaurs alive at some stage in the Ice Age movies.
And underneath in sort of like that Journey to the Center of the Earth version. It's okay. Very complicated. It's very complex.
Really?
But Santa Claus wasn't there. I did see that was one.
I didn't really understand how Santa would be there. I don't know. He's like a time-traveling Santa or something like that.
There's like Eskimos. They tried to eat an Eskimo baby in the first movie. Anyways, this movie, it's right on the end. It's maybe it kind of rocks, but we got to go to a break. And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We were just talking about Madagascar and how I can barely give it in. It kind of rocks, the Madagascar 3. But more importantly, way more interesting than Madagascar, we were talking about Gene Hackman in the break and trying to figure out what his last movie was. And you're right, it was Welcome to Mooseport.
Yeah, I guess that we sort of got to that from talking about Ray Romano, who was in Ice Age. For some reason, we were talking about Ice Age.
Well, we were talking about Ice Age because it kind of follows that same formula that the... It's following the same formula that
most non-Pixar animated movies do.
Yes, exactly. So the next, but you're telling me that Gene Hackman was hit by a car or something. What was that all about?
Yeah, a couple months ago, he was hit by a car while he was riding a bicycle, which is sort of surprising. Maybe he was sort of doing his own Royal Tenenbaums, and
that's possible. He wasn't in a gypsy cab.
Getting stabbed by a Pakistani man, I think.
Yeah. The guy who, he stabbed him because he stabbed him twice. He stabbed him only once.
Yeah, but he talks about it because that's the guy who stabbed him back, back in the day.
Yeah. So, and I was questioning, why are so many celebrities getting hit by vehicles? I mean, because you had Stephen King got hit by a car years ago.
Yeah, that was, late 90s?
Yeah, but I mean, these are not people that, I mean, it's different when you, like, you know, somebody gets in a car crash. You know, who was just found with the deal?
Lindsay Lohan usually is in a car crash pretty often.
Lindsay Lohan's life is a car crash.
Yeah, it's true.
there was somebody who just, they just found she had a DUI, and it was somebody famous, pretty blonde, I think. I forget who it was. They found out she had a DUI.
And not Brittany Murphy.
No, she got in a car crash and then died of diabetes complications. That's basically what happened. No, that didn't happen. My apologies to Brittany Murphy and her family, because I'm sure they listen to this show.
And Ashton Kutcher, the angel of death.
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, Demi Moore's not dead yet, but he broke up with her.
Dead yet.
Yet.
Yeah, there's a key word there.
That's right. And
we'll see how his next victim, fares.
But yeah, have you seen her face lately? Yikes. Anyways, speaking of Brittany Murphy... let's talk about Prometheus. I'm kidding. I'm
great,
I'm so
segue.
Mean. I'm so mean to Brittany Murphy. Do you ever notice that? Like you can have. It's like, I'm gonna get in so much trouble here. Ever notice that there's like celebrities that people just kind of like don't give a crap about? You know, like Brittany Murphy was one of them. Nobody cared about Brittany Murphy until she died.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
she didn't care that much about her career when she was alive. So why should I care about her in death?
Yeah, I mean,
she subjected me to not Material Girls, but.
No, I know what you're talking about. But Uptown Girls.
Yeah, Uptown Girls. She subjected me to Uptown Girls.
Would she take you to go see it or something?
No, but I was working at a movie theater and I had to preview it.
Oh, that's your own fault.
Well, she still subjected me to it, and so in the end, she got what she deserved.
I got two movies on DVD a couple years ago that ended up being her last two films, and they were The Asylum's Mega Fault, which also defines her career. And also, I think it was Abduction. It might have been called Abduction. It was not the one with Taylor Lautner, but it's...
From the future.
It was a direct-to-video one. That's again, shocking. My apologies to Brittany Murphy and her family. I'm sorry she's
they're
dead.
Listening.
Anyways, yeah, they just turned listening. Off. They're like, oh, we lost a listener to that one. Let's talk about Prometheus now. And this one, Ridley Scott directs his ambitious, not-quite-horror movie prequel to his 1979 classic Alien.
These are ancient civilizations that were separated by centuries, and yet this same pictogram was discovered in every one of them.
They're smiling.
I think they want us to come and find them.
We're all here because of a map you two kids found in a cave.
Not a map, an invitation.
From whom?
It's moving. These things moving.
What is that?
There's a ship.
We were so wrong.
Now, before we talk about this, I am going to say we're going to steer away from spoilers, because as many of you knew, and if you listened to previous episodes, I'd yell at guests for trying to spoil stuff. I yelled at you, didn't I? Did I yell
no.
at you?
No.
Okay.
Maybe not on the air. You might have yelled at me
yelled
some
at
other way,
time.
But it wasn't... I didn't want to ruin anything for you, but...
But no, I mean, I know some...
You were very defensive about it.
Yeah, people would be like, well, it's in the trailer. I'm like, no, don't even... I wouldn't watch the trailer.
No, you've told the story several times to anyone that will listen to how you walked out of a movie theater.
I have.
To avoid
I climbed over somebody once, and they were not happy about it. I'm like, get out! But no, there are, and it's not like it's. What's funny is the trailer. I wouldn't call the trailer overly spoilery, but it does include plot elements that are pretty much not revealed until the very end, but not completely.
Yeah, you could piece together a good piece of the movie, though, from just watching the trailer, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I really am I'm going to try to... I'm not going to talk spoilers here. I might be doing another podcast later this week about a very spoiler-heavy podcast, but of course we'll alert you to that. But in terms of very vaguely, we'll just say... I'm just going to say this... I would not suggest going and watching Alien right before seeing Prometheus. And the reason is even though ever since it was conceived, Ridley Scott has been out there saying it's not a direct prequel. And it's not. It doesn't play like we talked off the air, The Thing. When they did The Thing movie last year where it's suddenly like, all this, oh, the axe is in the wall, and there's the guy who's cut his wrist, and the dog is running in the, you know, and so it all sets up for John Carpenter's movie. I mean, seconds before John Carpenter's movie.
Yeah, I would definitely say that you would probably do yourself a better service by actually avoiding them.
Yeah.
Because I think you're going to be more likely to try and draw conclusions or connections if you go in just freshly watching the Alien series than if you avoid them and sort of go into it cold.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about it is as much as I tell people it's a good idea to avoid the trailers and avoid all the viral videos and that sort of thing, it did leave me unsure of what to expect from Prometheus. It's not a horror movie. It's not a horror movie. It has violence in it and has some horrifying things in it, but I wouldn't characterize it a horror. Oh, I'd characterize Alien as a horror movie. Would you agree?
Yes, I would.
Yeah, I mean, it's more speculative fiction. It has more in line with stuff like Forbidden Planet and 2001.
Space I even took House. A little bit of Sunshine.
Yeah.
With a little bit of that yeah. mixed in.
Very, just very, it's incredibly atmospheric. It looks beautiful, by the way. If you get a chance to see it in IMAX, even if you're going to go see it in IMAX, it's a big screen movie. The bigger the screen, the higher the resolution, the better.
Yeah, it is a very, very good looking movie. It sounded really good too.
Oh yeah, yeah. And so it has some really cool things in it. It at a couple points it stumbles into just sort of that big summer action movie. There's one or two scenes, but for the most part, it's an incredibly cerebral film, and it really brings up a lot of questions, and it does give a lot of talking points, not just about how this movie is and how it ties into Alien and how it ties into that universe, but how it, you know, what they're actually saying in it. And it there's a lot of things that happen in there that something happens, and you know that in the back of Ridley Scott's mind, he knew what was happening here, but you don't like something will be said in an alien language or a foreign language or not said, and you know the character knows what's happening, but you don't know what it is, and you can only guess. And I found that really interesting. I really did enjoy the very open-ended elements to it.
Yeah, I would say Prometheus is more of a thinking man's movie than Alien or any, you know, there's more discussion about who we are and where we're coming from and where we're going than Alien and the rest of that franchise goes.
And not even just, you know, origins and where we come from, but morality and immortality and what
it means. Humanity
and humanity,
what makes someone human. And
And I think it's fantastically acted. Michael Fassbender's incredible in it. I thought he was really great in it. And Noomi Rapace, is that how you say her name?
I'm not sure. I'm not very good at
the hot little Swedish chick who's like, she looks like she's like 3 feet tall.
She was I liked her much more in this than I liked her in Sherlock Holmes. Maybe I didn't care for the attempted gypsy accent so much in Sherlock Holmes, but I enjoyed her much more in this.
Yeah. I think she carried the movie. I definitely think she did. Whereas Sherlock Holmes, she was just a secondary character.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's no big surprise that Ridley Scott would take a female and kind of make her the focus of it. In fact, a couple females and make it, because he did that in Alien.
He's done that Thelma and Louise and several other movies.
Well, there was that movie too. Yeah, if you want to talk about that movie. but no, I thought
is
it
that,
was
is that movie woman centric?
Maybe a little bit. It shows that
it's not Brad Pitt's movie, is it?
Women are terrible drivers. That is what, if anything, if Thelma and Louise taught us anything, women are terrible drivers. Anyways, what's your, like I said, we're very, very vague on this, but I want people to go see it cold. See it as cold as you can, but understand it's not a horror movie. It's speculative fiction. It's science fiction. It's beautiful on the big screen. It works in 3D. We have about 30 seconds left.
It's more of a subtle 3D. It's not a in-your-face 3D, but the effect is well done.
Yeah, I mean, there's Madagascar, which is very in-your-face 3D, and then there's Prometheus, which is, it's subtle 3D, and it works. I think it totally works for what it is, and yeah, they do a lot of new things.
It adds a lot of depth to the movie, not like, you know, spiritually, but...
You're not going to have a spiritual experience for the 3D. Anyways, I'm going to say it rocks. What's your fat guy's grade?
Rocks.
All right.
2 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are in the infamous middle segment. I don't know why I said it that way.
Isn't this where we can swear?
This is where you can swear, yeah.
Go ahead.
You swear.
I've done it the last couple times.
No, you did it in the other segments last times.
No, but you usually let me just start off by swearing, even though I don't really need to. So you can get one out of the way if you want.
Okay, pussy fart. Okay. That's not even really a swear word, but you probably can't say that on the radio.
No, I'd probably say, they might allow queefing on the air, both the physical...
I don't think they'll let you say queef on the air. I think they would look it up.
Will they let you queef on the air?
Can you queef?
Well, I can't.
I would pay money for that.
It's just called farting when I do it. But
well, if you don't have a vagina,
yeah, but I'm saying no. Queefing. Like, if we were in some other studio and a woman was here, could she queef on the air, or would they bleep that?
I probably. I don't know. We could test it out. Let's go find a studio, bring in a woman, a queefable lady,
a queefable lady,
a queefable lady.
How do you put an ad out for that?
Very easy.
I want to see that Craigslist
ad. Wanted, queefable lady. Panties not required.
Unless she's rough, and then you might want that extra barrier between you and whatever the microphone is.
If you're going to queef, you don't want anything dulling the sound. You want it to queef out there for everybody.
I don't know. South Park has taught us that maybe we want something in between.
But it depends on if the purpose is to have a queefing lady. You'd want to have. I mean, it's kind of like saying, "Well, if we're going to have a naked lady, and if we're going to bring the naked lady in the magical studio in the sky, we're not going to put her in a sheer nightgown. We're going to make her naked,
unless she's nasty." That's what I'm sort of getting at. If she's nasty, I don't want her like queefing and blowing whatever onto like whatever is around. I don't want her queefing on a microphone that I'm going to put my face next to.
It would have to be one loud queef for somebody to.
I guess it depends on how intimate the microphone gets.
Sure. This is way more thought than I ever wanted to put into queefing.
I don't even know how we got on the subject.
You wanted me to swear. It's all your fault.
Go ahead and do it. And I was like, you do it.
You were the one who swore in the last year, but you swore in the middle and not in this segment.
That was my first visit.
You're like, welcome to Fat Guys in the Movie. I'm Kevin Carr. And you're like, fuck you. I'm like, no, you can't say that.
That is not how it happened. I swore in the final segment, sort of under my breath.
Yeah.
It was not like the opening monologue.
You were really drunk at the last time.
I was not.
You were totally drunk.
I was not drunk.
You were drunk with power.
Oh, that's possibly true.
Anyways, let's talk a little bit about box office. Last weekend, Snow White queefed all over the box office.
That's her one big talent. That's why her mouth is constantly open so she can get all that air sucked in.
I imagine that Kristen Stewart's queefs are very earthy. That's just my supposition.
Does she like eat a lot of granola or something?
She just doesn't look healthy.
Well, no, she looks like she wants to have sex with a vampire most of the time. Yeah. But
I wonder if her queefs smell like period queefs because she's a vampire now. Anyways, Snow White and the Huntsman made $56 million last weekend. To put in comparison, then it was MIB3, which did 28, which is an okay hold. It was about a 50% drop. But here's the thing. Snow White made more money in its three-day window, its Friday, Saturday, Sunday window, than Men in Black 3 made the previous week in its Friday, Saturday, Sunday window. And Men in Black 3 had a 3D ticket bump. It was a sequel. And it was Will Smith. So you can't tell me that this movie's doing great in the U.S. Now, just past $400 million worldwide. It's doing well overseas. But I don't know if I'd call Men in Black 3 a huge win for Will Smith.
No, I would agree with that.
It might end up being it's his 2012 of 2012. Whereas 2012, the movie was, it did okay. It was middling in the U.S., but it made like $600 million overseas.
So how did like Snow White compare with something like Red Riding Hood, which I would assume would go after a good amount of the same markets?
That one that with Amanda Seyfried last year?
Did you look that up?
I can't.
You don't have to. I was just...
It didn't. Well, Red Riding Hood did okay, but that was also
March, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like a March movie. This is a full blown summer movie. I mean, $56 million. What's funny is I wasn't wild about Snow White. I had serious problems with it, but finding out that it did well and $56 million is pretty doggone good. I'm okay with that. It's not one of those things where you see a terrible movie like The Devil Inside, and then that makes a ton of money on the weekend, and you're just like, oh, Jesus, people.
No, I didn't hate Snow White. I didn't have any great love for it either.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a good-looking movie.
Oh, it looked beautiful.
But it was overly long, and its star was incredibly dull.
Yeah, she's terrible. And that's what's funny is I had a conversation with somebody on Twitter about this. Was she, in fact, the draw? Because he had made a comment that it was, you know, her that brought people in, because he said he went and saw this. When he saw it, it was filled with tweens and their moms, and so he's thinking there's a Twilight crowd. And you can't discount that. I think any movie now that stars Jennifer Lawrence is going to get a certain interest from the Hunger Games crowd.
Yeah.
Just because that's what she's
the
from.
The Woman in Black had a Harry Potter crowd to it a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. So I think that you can't discount that, but I do not think that she was the draw. In fact, they kind of downplay her, especially when a lot of the trailers played up Charlize Theron, and they played up the action, and they played up... There was one thing I was reading that they did push for a more male-centric audience later, because they kind of thought, well, we have the women, because it's a Snow White movie, and it's got Kristen Stewart in it, but let's get the action and the, you know, and show that there's a little bit more to maybe the hunter at this, you know, whatever his name was, Chris Hemsworth.
Well, yeah, he's coming right off of Avengers and Thor last summer, and he's sort of the hot name, and so... I could see that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Now, remember, because Chris Hemsworth is the one who was in Snow White and the Avengers. Liam Hemsworth is the one who's
in Hunger Games.
In Miley Cyrus. Anyways. Yeah.
Touche. You've been saving that up. I think you said that to me last week.
Oh, don't point out when I repeat my jokes. That's what my kids are for. And Piranha 3DD. The actuals came in on that. Do you want to know how much Piranha 3DD made?
I'm actually quite interested.
Well, just to rattle them off beforehand, you had For Greater Glory, which made just under $2 million at number 10. It just squeaked.
Which one is that? Is that the Andy Garcia one?
Andy Garcia, the Catholics Go to War Against Mexico movie. I'm sure you were first in line for that one. There's one called Rowdy Rathor, which I don't even know what that is. Battlefield America,
which I finally watched the trailer for, and oh my god. I wish someone would have given all those parents condoms like 12 years ago.
Here's what's funny. Piranha 3DD made more money at half the locations than Battlefield America.
That trailer for Battlefield America is... There's like four or five trailers, and I watched them all, and they were just... They just got worse and worse and worse. And like the camera shaking when the little kids that could barely like make China and a little case rattle when they stamp their feet. Yeah. You know, they stamp their feet and the whole camera shakes. And it's just, oh, it's so bad.
Yeah, if Battlefield America made less than Piranha 3DD, and Piranha 3DD did not do well.
What did it end up making?
$182,000.
I don't understand their reluctance to push that either, because Piranha 3D made decent money.
Yeah, well, I actually rented Piranha 3DD and watched it. It was terrible. And I mean, I'm not even like
Piranha. not even like fun terrible like no, Piranha 3D was.
It was good old fashioned just sucky terrible. It was a poorly made movie. Did it have tits in it? Yes.
Well, that's a good advertising point.
Well, yeah, but you know, here's the thing: in this day and age, if you want to see boobs, you don't have to go to the movies to see boobs.
But I still sort of like being able to go to the movie and see, go to the movies and seeing boobs.
I love boobs in a movie, but see, like you remember what it was like as a kid, you watch HBO and it was just a thrill to see a movie that had tits in it.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you didn't have access to it. Nowadays with the internet, I mean, tits in the internet is nothing. I mean, that's not even, that's soft core at this point. You know, you want to see gaping asshole, cum fart cocktails, all that kind of stuff. That's the hardcore shit on the internet. But just a woman, if all you see is some areola, that's nothing. So... Yeah, so as awesome as it is to see boobies.
Especially in 3D.
I didn't get the 3D version because it was on demand.
I think Vudu has Piranha 3D in 3D.
How much was it?
I don't know. I think it was like I don't know. I haven't looked at
it. It was $6.99 on demand through Amazon. It would have been $7.99 for HD, but there's like restrictions that you can't then watch it on a computer if it doesn't work on your TV for whatever reason. And I was like, I'm not going to pay $7.99 and then have it not work. So I'll also pay $6.99.
I think Amazon probably would have refunded you.
Probably, but I didn't want... Then you're talking about like wasting time. then it's a time and money issue. Yeah,
your time is precious.
Yeah, so anyway, so it was terrible. It first of all, it's John Gallagher, who I do not think is a good director. And because he did Feast, I wasn't a big fan of Feast. Yeah. And I think he's a bit of a hack. This one is, it just literally falls apart. There's not even a story. They redo a lot of stuff.
And that's what's sad is it doesn't really even require that much of a story. You have piranhas, jailbait, naked jailbait, and like a jug of Kool-Aid to throw in the water.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't understand how you really mess that up because they got it right with the first one.
Well, that's
it was because, wrong.
Well, Alexander Aja was the one who did that one, or Aja. I don't know how you say his last name.
I think I could go direct a piranha movie and give the audience what it wants.
I think you could too. I think you would have done a much better piranha movie. Okay, I'm gonna spoiler territory. If you really are worried about Piranha 3DD, I'm worried all about Prometheus spoilers. I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'm going to spoil up some stuff with Piranha 3DD.
The eight people in America that want to watch it are going to be so disappointed.
If you haven't had your chance to see it now, you're not going to. I mean, there's like a scene where Katrina Bowen from... she's been in a bunch of things. I think she was in American Reunion. She was Oz's wife in American Reunion, and she was also... she was in Tucker and Dale versus Evil. She was
I know who you're talking about.
She goes in, and somehow piranhas swim up her vag, and she doesn't notice it. And then later, when she's having sex with a guy, it bites off his dick.
That's a really sort of a loose woman thing right there. If you don't notice, it's like, I'm not a piranha expert.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure piranhas don't swim up your vagina.
But it's like, okay, a Chinese fighting fish, you know, if that swims into your vagina, maybe.
It's Japanese fighting fish. You racist. Those fighting fish look exactly like
They call them in the pet store.
Aren't they Japanese fighting fish?
Asian fighting fish. How about that?
You're like, those fighting fish look the same.
Now I've been exposed.
No, but here's the thing with there's the thing, and then the guy like he's having sex with the piranha, bites his dick, and so you have to have another scene with a penis, and so they're at a water park. That's the whole thing, is they're at a water park and they've swum up because David Koechner, who plays the guy running the water park, has tapped into drilled an illegal well. whammy, and then they swim up in there and they get in the pools and all that kind of stuff. Well, when they attack, this is the thing, we're in the first, in the Piranha 3D, when they did that one, when the piranhas attacked, it was panic. And everybody panicked, and it was an absolute mayhem. Because there's, even though it's a crappy, shitty movie, and you don't want to know, you'd be like, you can't worry about logic and consistency, but there's certain basic levels of logic. That it's like kind of like if you're reading a book. If you're reading a Penthouse forum letter and it's got bad grammar in it, it's a Penthouse forum letter. But you would expect him to at least spell words properly. You expect it to have punctuation in it.
Maybe.
This one's missing the punctuation. Because the whole thing is they bring in David Hasselhoff to be one of the lifeguards at this park because he's David Hasselhoff. And so the piranhas start attacking. And Ving Rhames' character's there. Because he had his legs bitten off in the last movie, but he's there trying to recover and he takes out a gun
at the water park when he's going to be like the guy in the cage, pretty much. Let's look at the guy with no legs because this is relaxing. A water park with children like looking at you and staring and pointing at you because you have no legs.
That's recovery. But then he takes out a shotgun and he starts shooting a shotgun in the water at the piranha.
And he has a shotgun at the water park.
They're his legs. He had made his legs into shotguns. Don't again. This is the part where I'm like, okay, I can get past that. Then they cut to the next scene, and there's David Hasselhoff just sitting in the lifeguard chair looking at something. And I'm like, there's a guy shooting, and there's obviously piranha in the pool at this point.
Maybe this is sort of a joke on him being a drunk because this is the same guy that like eats hamburgers off the floor.
Well, that's true.
Maybe he's Just like, well, shit happens.
I think you're giving it too much credit because they have pools right next to each other. So while piranhas are attacking, people are screaming, getting eaten and destroyed, and people are shooting in the water. The pool there's not even a wall. Literally next to it. Nobody even notices.
Maybe to this water park, maybe piranhas in the pool is just like someone peeing in the pool. It's just not that big of a deal, and it's sort of expected.
I am not a big fan of peeing in the pool. I'm not swimming with you ever.
Well, I... number one, no one ever wants to see the two of us go swimming together.
We're doing water ballet next week.
Because it's going to sort of be like two walruses, you know, at the beach. It's not going to be good. No one's going to enjoy it. And there's going to be lots of screaming children.
I'm going to wear my Speedo.
Anyways, I'm not even going to wear that.
Bottom line is Piranha 3DD is terrible. So, and that made, like you said, it made less than $200,000.
It's amazing how we spent that much time talking about a movie that made no money.
We barely talked about Snow White, and now we're talking all about Piranha 3DD. What do you think is going to win this weekend? You said off the air that you didn't think Prometheus is going to win.
I don't know. School's out. It's like the first, I think, major week the school's out. R-rated, you know, Alien prequel versus Madagascar movie. I don't know.
I think Prometheus will definitely be number two.
I agree with that. And I think Prometheus is going to do very well for an R-rated science fiction film.
Yeah.
I just don't know if it's going to have enough to beat out Madagascar. Kid crazy. I want my kids to shut the fuck up, and I'm going to take them to the movies so I don't have to be a parent.
Weekend. Well, yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I think Madagascar will win the weekend, and it'll probably win the weekend with a good $60 million. Maybe more.
I would say if Snow White has it in it to do 60, I think Madagascar probably can do better than that.
Maybe 70. Maybe 70 or 80. Who knows? I mean, it could do really well. It's in 4,000 screens. It's a hugely saturated release. Prometheus is in 3,300. So I think Prometheus is good for 50.
Plus, Prometheus is quite a bit longer. And Madagascar, clocks in less than 90 minutes?
It's about 90 minutes, yeah.
So they can squeeze in a lot more show times into that.
It's a half hour. There's a half hour difference. And when you throw in the trailers, even then, you're still going to get a half hour difference. But I do think Prometheus is going to do well. For a comparison, the highest opening in theaters for any Alien movie was Alien versus Predator at $38 million. And then it was Alien. Then nothing made more than $20 million. Now that's of course taken in the fact that Alien and Aliens were made quite a few years ago.
Yeah, and when Alien came out, you could probably see a movie for a buck.
Well, and also if you look at the theater counts, Alien, the first Alien, was released in 757 theaters, which is considered a really small release now. And Alien versus Predator was 3,400 theaters, so it was about the same as what this is going to do. I think there's a lot of hype for it. It's doing well overseas. It's kind of like the Fat Guys in the Movie Show. It's like number one in Finland. but it is a very European sensibilities type of movie.
So that's Ridley Scott in general. Versus Tony, who has gone the opposite route.
I figured out today that...
They're half brothers?
No, I figured out that I've seen more I've seen a greater percentage of Tony Scott's movies than Ridley Scott's movies.
I'm just surprised you haven't seen 100% of both.
I mean, there's stuff... There's this gap of stuff before I became critic and that kind of thing, so I was doing other things where I had a life. So I never saw G.I. Jane, for example.
Viggo's good in that.
Who?
Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, Viggo Mortensen. I thought you would say Viggo. I thought that was your name for Demi Moore. That's your pet name for her.
Soon to be Corpse is my name for her.
Gladiator is, in fact, the highest grossing movie that Ridley Scott's ever done.
That's not surprising.
It's only $187 million. Well, that was 12 years ago.
Too, yeah, that had a big opening for an R-rated movie at the end of May, I believe. So.
It did $34 million in 2000, which is really good for an opening week. Which, again, that's almost at the level of the Alien vs. Predator movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if Prometheus opens with $34 million, it's going to be considered a flop, I think.
Yeah, it has. Well, it's a much more expensive film. It's like $150 million or whatever.
I would say if it does not hit $55 million, I think it's going to be considered a failure.
Yeah, but I mean,
Until video, I think.
Well, until video, and we'll see how it plays through the summer, because there's not a whole lot of adult fare. Not adult.
I'm really actually surprised they're going for a summer release on this. I'm surprised it's not a November
But you know, it could surprise you. I mean, there are certain ones, even Robin Hood, as lame as Robin Hood was, it was still $105 million is what it took in the box office. But if Prometheus opens with a $30 to $40 million opening, that's a flop. But I don't think it will. I think it's going to have a good solid.
Yeah, I think it's garnered enough interest, not just with one segment of the population to do well.
And it's international. It's going to probably be pretty good. So anyways, in sticking with the Prometheus and Ridley Scott discussion, let's talk about one of our emails, which is from Thomas from Seattle. It's the second one on the list there. This comes from Thomas from Seattle. I'm not going to read you the whole email, but basically he says, he basically says, why is the film, he's talking about the film blogger community, you know, embracing only a handful of Ridley Scott films, that being Alien, Blade Runner, and now Prometheus. And then others are seen as clunkers, something like A Good Year. But he says, why is it the film blogger community so similar to the Borg in Star Trek? Why do we dissent? Why can't we dissent? Why do we all have to think the same way in saying that those are the three movies? Actually, you know, I'm going to read it because I want to get you the full thing. He goes, is it kind of sad that Ridley Scott is known for only three films, Alien, Blade Runner, and now Prometheus? I know he's had some clunkers. A Good Year was not a good 120 minutes, but most of his movies have some merit. Why are people in the film blogger community such fair-weather fans? If a director does not do exactly what we want him to do, do we throw him under the bus? If Christopher Nolan decided to direct a rom-com with Kristen Stewart next, all of his fans would throw a fit far and wide. Never mind, he might make a good movie out of it. First of all, I think Christopher Nolan could do a rom-com. Putting Kristen Stewart in it is a big fucking idiocy move. I think that it would be too much of a attempt to be a Twilight movie, and so I think it goes to more what the expectations are. But I think if Christopher Nolan did a rom-com, I think people would at least give it a chance, don't you?
I don't know. It's just not what he's not known for that. So I think people will give any movie a chance if it looks good.
Yeah.
So if he makes a good-looking movie, I don't think it would really matter what type of movie he makes. But if he makes...
Well, I think if he said, I'm going to make my next movie...
If he's making the Jack and Jill of Christopher Nolan films, well, then... But
I think if say, Christopher Nolan said after The Dark Knight Rises, he's like, I'm doing a romantic comedy. I'm doing a lighthearted, fun, cute romantic comedy. If he said that, I think people would be like, okay, that I'll see what it is because I'm curious. I'm curious to see what he does. Whereas if he says they're gonna make another Twilight film and I'm gonna direct it, I think people would revolt. But I don't think Christopher Nolan would want to have anything to do with Twilight.
I think if he was doing something he wanted to do, sort of a rom com esque, I think it would be more like in tone with like A Scent of a Woman sort of. Yeah. You know, I don't think like Maid of Honor, or I'm having a tough time thinking of like bad romantic comedies.
I could see Christopher Nolan say, I want to do a more intimate, I don't want to do the big IMAX special effect movie. I want to do something more intimate. And I think people would trust him because movies like even something like Insomnia was a much smaller movie. I mean, and Memento.
Yeah. And I could see him going back and doing a smaller movie like that. I just don't know if he would go.
I don't think, but that's the thing.
The rom-com route. I don't think he'd do his own type of personality. I don't think that's the type of movies he's interested in making based on what he's made so far.
But even like if you take something, going back to Ridley Scott, he mentioned A Good Year. A Good Year was Ridley Scott's version of a rom-com. It was not a typical rom-com, but that was his version of it. It wasn't a comedy, but that's how Ridley Scott would do a romance.
Well, what was that movie that is, I can't think of it, and maybe you can find it. There was... Was it Wes Craven that directed a...
He did Music of the Heart.
Yeah. You know, that was like his arrangement. He had to direct that, I think, to get financing for some other movie. And he did it.
And sometimes you do a diversion piece. Sam Raimi was known for horror, and suddenly he did like Quick and the Dead, which wasn't a great movie.
And then he also did the baseball one with Kevin Costner.
Yeah, yeah. So people will do a diversion, and that's, I don't know if Christopher Nolan's there. In terms of Ridley Scott has done different things. I mean, he started with Alien, Blade Runner, and Legend, but then he started doing other things, and even some that people would forget and be like, oh, White Squall, that was his movie?
That's actually a decent movie. That just came out on Blu-ray maybe two or three weeks ago.
Well, but even stuff like Body of Lies, which wasn't a good movie.
No.
But it was him doing a political thriller. It was him. I think Ridley Scott's one of those directors who will stretch.
Yeah, Hannibal is sort of a weird, when you throw it into his other bodies of work, Hannibal is sort of a...
It's very dark. It's much darker than what he normally does, actually. But I think, I actually have to, and we talked about this off the air, I kind of have to, I take issue with, I question what the original supposition of that Thomas says. I don't think he's only been embraced for Aliens, Blade Runner, and Prometheus. I think you've got a lot of people who love Gladiator. I think there's a lot of people who love Kingdom of Heaven, and particularly the director's cut. People go crazy over the director's cut.
I'm one of them.
There's other ones like, you know, American Gangster was a big movie. A lot of people like that one. I don't think there's very few movies that people would turn on.
1492. A quest for peace, or a quest of paradise. Conquest of paradise.
But even like Thelma and Louise, I mean, people don't. If you ask the film blogging community for a great movie, they're not going to immediately name Thelma and Louise. But most people like that movie.
But it's also now 21 years old, so it's not it's not exactly fresh in people's minds.
Yeah, exactly.
Blade Runner and Alien have stayed fresh in people's minds because it's become part of American subculture.
Yeah,
especially in movies, they're trend setting movies.
Especially in the film blogger community. I mean, those are probably the highest level. But in general, I don't think there are very few movies that I think people have turned their back on. There's a lot of movies that I think people would be, oh, again, another one, Black Hawk Down. There's a couple of them I haven't seen, and Black Hawk Down's one of them. And people are like, if you say greatest Ridley Scott movies, they're not going to necessarily say Black Hawk Down first. But if you mention Black Hawk Down, they'll be like, oh, yeah, that was a great one.
Yeah.
You know.
And even something like Matchstick Men. That's not a good year, but that's a very different type of movie for him to do.
And it's a good movie.
You know, and that's still when Nick Cage was relevant and still, not just doing junk.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think what it is his last two movies, which were Robin Hood and Body of Lies, were kind of lame and kind of soft, and they didn't play well, and nobody really got behind them, especially in the film blogger community. I think American Gangster, people did, and then A Good Year, but then Kingdom of Heaven, people were behind. But he has a good track record. It's just, I think the reason Prometheus has brought so much back is because Alien is such a beloved movie, and the franchise so kind of went completely batshit crazy.
Yeah, it went a bit pear-shaped.
Yeah, and so then they're so excited for it, and right now there's a lot of focus on Blade Runner, because he's talking about a sequel, and he's talking about the, and the fact that it's the summer of 82, and it's been 30 years since Blade Runner, so you got that anniversary coming up, I think in, what is it, June or July?
June.
When it came out. So yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna have to disagree with you, Thomas. I don't think that he has these fair weather friends. I think in general he's a beloved director, and I think a lot of people like what he does.
And he has had some misses. You know, he's not perfect, but there's just some of the movies that we've mentioned and talked about are hot for that year or two, and some time has passed. You know,
and you can't be a film director, even a mildly prolific film director for 35 years and not have some shitty movies.
Yeah, and just some movies that are just like, oh, it's a good movie. It's not going to be in my top 10 movies of all time. And it's not going to, you know, Kingdom of Heaven is a good movie, and so is Black Hawk Down, and so is Gladiator. But, you know, people still talk about Gladiator. You know, that's one that I'm just sort of like, I'm still sort of surprised that one is as popular as it is.
Yeah.
Because I think it's actually one of his more in the middle of the road. I would take Black Hawk Down or Kingdom of Heaven above Gladiator almost any day of the week.
Well, and I think also, like you do, to compare to Christopher Nolan, Nolan's only been making movies for, what, 12, 13 years?
Yeah, like, what, 98, 99? When was Following? Memento?
No, Memento was 2001, okay. Something like that. And then Following was before that. It was a very small movie. So he's only been making movies for a little bit more than a decade. Give him 20 more years, he's going to have some crap that he makes. He will have a bad movie if he keeps this up. Now, if he just stops making movies after Dark Knight and then maybe makes one 10 years later, you may not have that, but he does one every 2 years.
Even that's not even, you know, Terrence Malick.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, he's had his problems, but...
Don't get me started on Terrence Malick.
You know, I think with Ridley Scott is he sort of disappeared after Thelma and Louise a little bit because he did 1492, which was not well-received. White Squall is a good movie, but it didn't make, no pun intended. You didn't make a splash with that.
Oh, don't tell me no pun was intended with that one. Entirely intended.
Yes, but I'm trying to, play it off. And, you know, G.I. Jane it caused some buzz mostly because, Demi Moore shaved her head.
Yeah.
But that seemed like it was a bigger deal than the actual movie itself.
Yeah.
And then he did Gladiator, and then he was huge again.
Yep.
And then he's like, oh, well, I'm going to follow it up with Hannibal, which that was sort of
a big
mixed
deal.
Reception.
But it was a big movie.
Yeah, it was a big movie, but it was not critically or universally critically acclaimed.
Yeah.
And then he came back with like Black Hawk Down and started doing these big movies again. But he has an up and down.
And even stuff like career. Kingdom of Heaven, where he does Kingdom of Heaven, which pretty much flopped.
That flopped hard. That was probably his biggest flop up until
until Goodyear.
Yeah,
just coming
it was probably
next,
his biggest flop in between.
It was his biggest flop since White Squall, actually, really, would be.
Really? 14? I think 1492 probably did a lot worse.
Well, but it did, like, slightly worse, but it may have had a bigger budget. But then, you know, Kingdom of Heaven didn't do well, didn't get very good reviews, but then the director's cut came out, a lot of people
which I still think is funny, because Fox has not learned to trust him. Mm-hmm. Maybe with Prometheus, maybe they've given him a little bit more creative control, but it's just like, how many times has Fox sort of tried to...
Well, he's all over the map. He's all over the map with his. I mean, he's done a good year, Kingdom of Heaven and Alien with Fox, and that's it. Everything else, I mean, is like Universal, Warner Brothers, Sony.
I
think the only one he hasn't done stuff with is Disney.
I always sort of credit Ridley Scott with the creation, or most people will credit him with the creation of the director's cut.
Yeah.
And after like seeing what happened with Blade Runner,
yeah,
with that and the success of the director's cut and. Gosh, what was the other one that he did that was a really big director's cut?
Well, Alien had a big
one. Legend had a... I didn't like the director's cut of Alien.
It's okay. You can watch either one. I think it's fine. I think her going into the basement and finding...
Tom Skerritt
was a little bit odd. I correct myself. G.I. Jane and White Squall were both Disney. Buena Vista.
Yeah,
actually.
They were Touchstone probably, or Hollywood.
Let's talk real quick. We got another email. This is from Steve Gabe, who we had, of course, on last week. So he wanted to throw in his 2 cents on a question here, and his question is: do you ever tire of the age-old pulled back out of retirement for one more job routine? Well, sometimes it works. Unforgiven, for instance. For the most part, it's exhausting watching it all over again, even when they try and twist it up by stating in the closing the person's back for good. Oh, and I think Mark Wahlberg played that character in over 50% of his films. And that worn-out plot, what worn-out plot would you like to see get retired from Steve Gabe? Thank you for the question, Steve. In terms of that, there's very few plots that... There are very few plots that I don't just sort of just conventions, excuses for a movie that I immediately turn my nose up, unless it's something like I just saw Lola Versus today. And that one's just, it's a relationship, breakup relationship, dealing with a relationship. Greta Gerwig gets dumped and she has to sort of get her life back together. Those kind of plots bug me because I have no patience for people like that. But
something like when I watch the trailer for That's My Boy, and it's something where it's, Adam Sandler has to make right.
Yeah. And, well, I am tired of Adam Sandler playing a super wealthy guy who's married to a totally hot wife.
Who has, anger issues, but deep down he's actually a really nice guy, but he has anger issues, so he flies off the handle and does outrageous things. Yeah. Or just sort of the basic romantic comedy plot of, okay, we're going to go along, and then we're going to... Some secret that we had in the first act is going to come back, and they're going to break up, and then some grand gesture will bring them back together again by the end.
I don't get tired of rom-com plots simply because I think rom-coms are, they're there. They are a formula, and if you don't like the formula, it's like a zombie movie. I get tired of zombie movies. Walking Dead killed me on that. But teen angst movies, teen angst horror. Not quite horror movies, and that's more TV because you've got Vampire Diaries and Teen Wolf. And of course, you've got the Twilight Saga.
Loose term.
Yeah. I don't get tired. I think any story, I'll give any story a chance. It just depends on how well it's done. I mean, pull back from the retirement. I remember the movie Open Range with Kevin Costner.
Hmm.
That was kind of one of his, because he had kind of retired from being a really bad dude and was working as a cowboy basically, and then he kind of gets pulled into doing something. And I thought that was fantastic. I loved that movie.
Yeah, and there's he mentions Mark Wahlberg. It all sort of depends on how well it's done.
Yeah,
I think Shooter's not a great movie by any means. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And there's
Rambo, he does it every single goddamn movie.
And what's funny is, he's But it's a level of execution.
Yeah.
With that.
Yeah.
Two and three are fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, the first one and the fourth one are quite
really
a bit better.
Solid, yeah.
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 And same thing, you know, it's all level of execution for that.
Yeah, I would hardly...
I don't get tired of the same... I don't want to see the same plot in every movie, but if it's well done, then it can find a way of still being entertaining and fresh.
Yeah, I hardly think you can categorize movies and say this specific plot is bad, because it's either not for you in the beginning. Teen angst, vampire romance... crappy movies, they've never been my thing. So yes, I want to see it retired, but there was never any point where I'm like, I really like the genre. No, I never did. So I guess to say, is there any worn out plot? The only worn out plots I'm tired of are the ones that well, you know what, I'll tie this into Prometheus. One of the things I loved about Prometheus was it was not just another alien escapes in a spaceship movie.
No, and I'd almost qualify Prometheus as, you know, it's not even definable in almost, you know, yeah, what genre it's in. It,
but if you look at, like, Alien was groundbreaking because that's what it was. And then the sequel was different, so I like Aliens.
It was really...
In essence, it was the same kind of thing, only times 100. And then when they did Alien 3, he went, no, I mean, it was just, instead of being on one ship, they're on a prison planet. And then on the fourth one, they swerved in some interesting ideas. But again, it was just aliens on this ship and people had to escape.
Yeah, one and three are sort of similar, and two and four are sort of similar because, you know, we have one alien in one and three, and then we have multiple aliens on two and four. But on the second one, we're on the planet, and on the fourth one, we're on the ship. And then they reverse that for the first one and the third one.
But even then, I think ultimately all turn into... Aliens escape, we got to escape from. And I really appreciated the fact that Ridley Scott just didn't make another one of those and made an undefinable movie. But it's not that I don't like a good monster movie. It's just, if I want to watch aliens attacking people on a ship, I'll go watch the original Alien again. I don't need to see another movie that's basically the same formula.
How many times are we going to watch the wolves in Twilight go at each other, you know?
Growl and talk to each other.
Rawr, rawr, rawr. It never gets old. Waste of the Twilight fans.
Well, no. So anyways, I hope that answers your question, Steve. I don't mind that standard log line, but it's what you do with it between the log line and the script, and then between the script and the movie.
Because he points out Unforgiven, and, you know, he's made a career of that type of movie. It's
Pale Rider, I think, was basically the same thing.
Or what was the last Dirty Harry movie, which isn't the best Dirty Harry movie by any means, but he's sort of pulled out of retirement in that one, isn't he?
Well, and even...
Or Bloodwork, or...
Or Gran Torino, even.
Yeah.
I mean, it's slightly different.
He's pulled out of retirement to be a badass, not really to go back to a job, but just to kill people.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he was shooting gangsters when he was younger in Gran Torino, but it was him... His movies are more, to even make a more broad description of that plot line, those movies are not somebody pulling out of retirement, it's somebody having to step up and do the right thing. And it will sometimes get violent and ugly.
Hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we want to see. All right, so with that, let's move on. Is there anything else you want to sound off about there?
Nope, I think I'm all out on that.
Let's move on to the Fat Guy 5, and this is an honor. We actually have 6 because we couldn't narrow it down. We originally didn't have enough, and then we found it.
Let's be fair. Who couldn't narrow it down?
Well, you.
No. I have 5.
All right. Well, no.
Kevin Moore has like 7.
No, I have... Well, yeah, you would put this really wacky one. We're not even going to get into
that. No. Yours counts as 3.
No, mine doesn't count as 3.
One of yours counts as 3.
Let's get started. All right. Anyways, these are 5 worthy prequels. These are the ones that we think are worthy. The first one is Godfather Part 2, which is sort of a partial prequel, partial sequel. Because it does both.
Let's not get on this argument again.
Well, no. It does both because it tells simultaneously the story of Vito Corleone, but it also tells the events after The Godfather. So, I mean, it works in both senses.
I agree.
Okay.
We don't have much to say about that one, do we?
I mean, yeah, who's going to argue that? It's The Godfather, for crying out loud. Red Dragon is another one that we had mentioned.
Yeah, and I don't know if we'll take you know, not that you're going to get like angry emails, but I wonder if we'll take flack for this one because I really like Red Dragon, and from what you've told me, you like Red Dragon, but I don't feel like Red Dragon is universally liked by a lot of people.
I think it's one that
I feel like is underrated, despite the fact that Brett Ratner is the director.
Well, I think there's a couple things going on. I think there's a lot of people who have a lot of love for Michael Mann and what he did with Manhunter, even though I wasn't a big fan of
Manhunter. I actually really like Manhunter, and it doesn't bother me.
It's a different movie. It's ultimately a remake.
And it's just a completely style-wise, you know, it's 80s versus, what, that was very early 2000s. It's just completely different filmmaking.
Yeah.
Michael Mann wouldn't make a movie like Manhunter today the way he did that one.
No.
His style has changed a lot.
I think there's a lot of people who hate Brett Ratner, and he's an idiot.
Yeah, he sucks.
But I like a lot of his movies in spite of myself. I mean, there's a lot of movies of his that I'm just like, I like that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. It sounds like a guilty pleasure. Yeah. I won't want to watch any of those movies with you, but I don't begrudge you for liking crap every once in a while.
We all like crap.
Yeah, I like a lot of it.
The next one is yours.
Just go ahead and read it.
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yeah, which is a personal favorite of mine. Which
is that your favorite indie movie?
I don't know. It's really strange because it was when I was a kid. But I don't know if it was just me trying to like rebel against my parents who absolutely despised the movie.
Well, wait, did you? But you didn't see it in the theater, did you?
No, too young. My first one I saw in theaters was Last Crusade.
Okay, okay. Because I was like 12 when Temple of Doom came out. I loved it.
Temple of Doom was the first one I saw.
Oh, okay.
I saw it on like HBO, probably in 1986 or 87. And, you know, so I was about four or five, and of course I was already sneaking around trying to watch things I wasn't supposed to.
Of course.
At that age.
That's what HBO was for.
Exactly. I saw Clockwork Orange that way.
Wow!
But
would have fucked you up.
Yeah, that's when my parents were out of town.
There you go.
Stupid grandparents.
Yeah, I do think, I loved it as a kid, Then I went through the point later on, I got in my 20s, and I was like, oh, that's a dumb movie. And then I grew to appreciate, I showed it to my kids when the last Indiana Jones movie came out. I showed my kids the three movies, and they loved it. And
that's where you have to come from. It's not really, Temple of Doom is, I don't think, made for a adult audience as much as it is a kid's.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't mind when kids say they like the Star Wars prequels, because it's not made for me, it's made for them. Mm-hmm. Just like Star Wars was made for people sort of more our age, when we were kids, than it was for, you know, people in their 50s that, you know, when those originally came out.
Well, yeah. And on that line, the next one on the list, which is the one I'm throwing in there, it's Star Wars. And I have a note in my essay, fuck you all, I liked them. And I know a lot of people don't like the prequels.
I thought they progressively got better as they went, but
there's elements to him I can't defend Jar Jar. I can't defend the acting of Hayden Christensen.
I don't even blame Hayden Christensen. I blame the script on that.
It's crappy
script. I don't think he's a terribly gifted actor, but I think he is just completely obliterated by that script and what he's forced to say and how George Lucas wants him to say it.
And it's a director problem. And I think Lucas works better when he just is a story guy and he has other directors working for him. But here's the thing. I like the Star Wars. A lot of people are like, oh, the prequels. It's sort of cool to say you hate the prequels. And I think a lot of people people jump on it even
It's like a hipster thing.
It is in a lot of ways. I mean, I do think because you can't tell me that in 2005, Revenge of the Sith made as much money as it did and had such excitement behind it that now everybody looks at me like, oh, I didn't like that anyways. I mean, there are people that are like that. And I know people who and I've pointed this out to people where I'm like, look, if you want logical consistencies, the first three movies are full of logical inconsistencies.
And once again, it's one of those things where you're much more forgiving of something that you watched as a kid.
Exactly.
Than you are something that you watch with critical eyes as an adult.
It's the Goonies factor.
Yeah,
I've gone over that in the past on the show where it's like a lot of people I know who are your age, maybe a little older, saw Goonies a lot on HBO. And they were like 10 when they saw it. And that's exactly what it was made for. I was like 14 when it came out. I was a little too old. And then I saw it in like the dollar theater. So I was 14, 15 when I saw it. And I was like, it's okay. But it's stupid. You watch it now. And I watch it now. I show my kids. They fucking love the Goonies. And I love it because I love watching them with it. But I still look at it and I say, there's serious problems with that movie.
Yeah, and my wife is one of her favorite movies from a kid. And what's funny is she never saw any of the Indiana Jones movies or anything that was sort of, you know, same age group. But she loves the Goonies, but I had to, like, train her.
Train her. You're holding a treat, and you're spraying her with a water bottle, making sure.
I was going in more of a weird sexual direction with that. But, yeah, it was.
That's one thing that can happen.
I had to train her into liking Indiana Jones.
Exactly.
The hard way.
And the thing is with and the Star Wars thing, there's problems with it. I'm not denying it. But through and through, I don't hate them. I watched them, recently watched all three of them. Because what happened is when episode one came out in 3D, I took my kids. I fucking loved it. Loved it from beginning to end. Yeah, it had stupid stuff in it, but it was a blast to watch again. And I'm 40, you know? And then I showed them Clones and Sith, and they loved that too. And we watched episode, you know, 4, 5, and 6, and we loved all those. And, you know, it's the same thing. People sit there and be like, oh, the original trilogy is awesome. Like, what about the Ewoks? Well, fuck the Ewoks. But yeah, the original trilogy is awesome.
And that's what's funny. I can defend the Ewoks. I have no issue with them.
I thought the Ewoks were fine. They're fine. And all the stuff. And the people are like, oh, he's just doing it to make money. I'm like, he wasn't with his other movies. Star Wars is the only one that came from a pure stance. And even then, it was re-edited for an audience. Because it was originally much longer and more drawn out. You knew that, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that, you know, there is that sort of, well, I don't like it. Oh, fuck the prequels. It's so terrible. George Lucas raped my childhood. Screw him. Greedo shot first. Or Han shot first. And I'm like, eh. I don't have the
I don't want to get into that argument. I still am holding fast to my no money to George Lucas rule. But
That is totally cool. The next one, actually, these are two for these. Both came out last year, and this is why I'm throwing them in together. Last year was a great year for prequels because you had X-Men First Class.
Yeah.
You didn't like X-Men First
Class? No, I did not.
Shame on you. It was better than Last Stand, wasn't it?
That's not saying much.
What is better than Wolverine? Wolverine's technically a prequel as well.
Yeah, and that's not saying much either. I love the first two X-Men movies. Everything they've done has been progressively worse or just maybe... X-Men, I don't know if it was, or X-Men First Class, I don't know if it was worse than Wolverine, but it definitely is sort of scraping the bottom of the barrel. I didn't care for it, and I really, really, really wanted to like it. I was excited going forward. I liked the cast. Mm. I just did not care for the execution.
I did like that one. And then the other one was Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which was a fantastic movie.
Yeah, and we sort of discussed whether or not that's a true prequel or not, but I think...
How far in Prometheus territory does it go, being a... Just hinting at what is eventually going to... You could do 7 movies between Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Planet
of the absolutely. Apes. Oh, absolutely. You know, it'll be interesting to sort of see if that becomes if it's more of a prequel or more of a reimagining.
Yeah.
But still, I think it's worthy on that list, and I was the one that came up with it, so I guess I shouldn't discount it.
don't argue yourself out of the
exactly.
job. Exactly. All right, well, we better get going here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about DVDs. And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are wrapping it up here after the middle segment where we got really raunchy and then we got really
cogent
and serious and had a very respectable discussion about film. So
yeah, what happened?
I don't know. So if you're listening to this on the radio, you can go to fatguysinthemovies.com and listen to the show again and skip to just that first part of the middle segment, and then it'll get respectable and interesting later on. Let's get right to the next one. What's the... We talked a lot about Prometheus. We talked about Ridley Scott. We talked about that kind of stuff and his career. But what is coming up next year? Do you remember?
DVD Roundup.
There we go. I was, of course, vamping as I'm trying to get the app to show.
I kept hearing the whipping noise.
The whipping noise. That's the children in the basement of the magical studio in the sky. That's where we keep Tom Skerritt.
Sort of, you know, it's sort of like the mines in Temple of Doom.
That's right. Yeah, they're looking for the Shankarshit zones, right, as we speak.
Shankara. God, what type of Indiana Jones fan are you after you chastised me one time for not knowing the city in Star Wars?
Which city?
The one that you gave me so much grief about.
What, Mos Eisley?
Yes.
Shame on you. Anyways,
the Shankara stones.
What are the DVDs you want? I'll let you go. Or do you want me to go first? All right, the first one. There's a lot of stuff. Actually, this is a great week for DVDs and Blu-rays. There's a ridiculous amount. There's John Carter, which was a lot of fun. I think the biggest problem with it is Taylor Kitsch. I just don't think he's a good star. And I think we're done with it. I don't think we have to worry about it.
I don't know if that's the biggest problem. I just don't know if they knew how to market that type of movie.
It's a tough sell. And it was very expensive for what it was. But John Carter's there. 3D Blu-ray. Yep. Blu-ray. Definitely check it out. Journey to the Mysterious Island. There's another one I liked. It's basically a kid's movie. And it's ultimately just a big
excuse. A kid's movie.
It is totally a kid's movie. I watched it with my family. We loved it. It was a lot of fun to watch again. That one's also in 3D Blu-ray as well. Burn Notice Season 5 and White Collar Season 3. Those are two USA shows that I do enjoy quite a bit. So.
I haven't been able to keep up with Burn Notice the last couple of years. I think I stopped watching at the end of Season 2 or 3, but I know it is on Netflix now.
Is it? Definitely check it out. It has its ups and downs.
Might be able to... How long can that story run without getting a little stale? So I think is the problem I ran into.
This season, the season 5 is him trying to get his way back in the CIA. They're actually kind of bringing him back in. Ah. So there's some development there, and that's nice. But White Collar Season 3, that's one I really do enjoy. There's also Act of Valor, which I know you didn't like.
I had a hard time like really hating on it, because how much can you really hate on soldiers that are trying to act?
how much you can hate on people that are actually literally laying down their lives for your freedom?
It's like, how much of a jerk can you be? But at the same time, if you're that good at shooting a gun, you should be that good at reading a script.
Well, I think what they should have done, the biggest problem with Act of Valor is the fact that they have the SEALs acting the dramatic.
Yeah, and it's a double-edged sword, because they're like, well, these are the real guys doing it, and then these are the real guys acting it, and it's...
But the problem is, when the real guys doing it, they're all decked out in their fatigues and their helmets, and you could have put me in there, and they'd be like, well, he's a little chubby in that shot. And
well, with all the digital effects and everything, they probably just had him walking and just put the... had him lip sync and put better actors with voiceovers in.
They do face replacement all the time on stuff, so... But Act of Valor's there on Blu-ray and DVD. Machine Gun Preacher, which was okay. It's a little bit... No pun intended. This one, no pun is really intended on this one. It's a little preachy.
Yeah, and I did not care for it. I just found the characters almost across the board just to be completely unlikable.
Unlikable, and they do stupid things. Yeah. Like, I'm going to start a war with this warlord. Wait, he's killing the children.
I'm going to get really preachy about the fact that this guy's killing people when I'm going to take the law into my own hands.
Exactly. And let's move ahead. We've got Safe House, which is Ryan Reynolds and Denzel Washington, which was only the second movie this year to break 100 million right after The Vow. We won't talk about The Vow. And then there's a whole bunch of re-releases. You got Yellow Submarine, which is first time I ever watched it. That's a cool movie. Psychedelic 60s things. You got Hoosiers, the 25th anniversary Blu-ray. You've got The Sting and Smoking the Bandit, both coming out on Blu-ray from Universal for their 10-year anniversary. What do you've got?
100-year anniversary.
100 years, yeah, not 10 years. They started in 2000.
A couple other catalog titles this week are Color of Money and Cocktail, starring the always awesome Tom Cruise.
You say that. No pun intended. What? When in Rome.
And a couple... Clint Eastwood movies, Perfect World, which isn't he directs, but he doesn't. He's in it, but he doesn't really star.
That happens.
And Blood Work, which is sort of a Dirty Harry-esque movie. It could have been a Dirty Harry movie if they would have rewritten it a bit.
I'm not wild about Eastwood's directing, because it's very long and drawn out.
I'm more interested in the stuff he directs that he's in than the stuff he directs that he's just. Yeah. There for the or just behind the scenes. Mystic River, I guess, is a good exception, but yeah. I didn't really care for the boxing one.
Oh yeah,
except for the hilarity.
Well, we'll do that another day. We got about 45 seconds left. The stinker is Falling Skies Season 1. I don't know whether you like that or not.
I don't watch TNT.
It was bad. It's Walking Dead with aliens and boring. So it's the review wrap up. Madagascar 3. I said it kind of rocks, and you didn't see it. And Prometheus, we both said rocks.
Yep.
Both kind of want to see it again. Next week we have Rock of Ages with the always impressive Tom Cruise. Isn't that what you said? And That's My Boy with the always unimpressive Adam Sandler. Real quick, you got about 20 seconds. Where can we find you?
Once again, you can find me at movieshateyou2.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/moviesHateYou2, and on Twitter at movies hate, the letter U, and two, T-O-O.
All right. Thank you very much. You can go to Fat Guys in the Movies and get all the information, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Like the show you just heard? Then head on over to FatGuysAtTheMovies.com to hear more. Fat Guys Network flagship show, Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The Idiot Boxers with Kevin and Merrill. Celluloid Spotlight with Merrill and Hash. And if you like any of what you hear, kick us a few bucks using the donation button on the sidebar. Or just leave us an iTunes review. Fat Guys Network is where the ooey-gooey podcasting goodness is at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.